Looking forward.
Maybe we shouldn't eat tonight. Just
don't eat before you come tonight.
Is it meaty? Tonight. Is this? Can I have supper beforehand and make myself flashy?
You don't need to eat food.
Is this all being recorded? Oh dear, quite embarrassing.
Don't tell your wife.
But she can listen on Kaila Loshen. So our limud of Chofetz Chaim every day is l'schus refuah shalema of Yosef Dov ben Chayla b'soich shal Chayla Yisrael. So the Chofetz Chaim, you might remember this one. This is one of the halachas I think that everybody remembers from last time round, and that is the case where a person wants to speak Lashon Hara about someone else, but he includes himself in it. You know, me and Fred, we burgled a bank. Yeah, right? Or me and Fred, when we were children, yeah, we put honey on the Rebbe's seat together, so that when the Rebbe sat down, obviously he couldn't get up afterwards. Yeah, and things like that. So you've got situations, yeah, where it happens. You get the best man standing up at the chasna, or standing up at the Sheva Brochas and recounting stories about the chosen, about things that he got up to, or that we got up to together, and things that we did. Yeah, a person's allowed to speak Lashon Hara about himself. Yeah, that's no issue. If you want to talk about yourself, that's fine. You want to tell people things you did wrong. Remember, Abba Dunna used to say always that he used to say a few things. He had very few interesting lines. One of them was that his parents used to regularly make Shema Brochas for poor families, for colors who were getting married who didn't have anybody else to make for them. And he said that he, as a boy, he used to go under the table and swap all the ladies' shoes. The old ladies sitting at the table at Sheva Brochas, they'll take their shoes off, yeah? So he used to swap them around. So afterwards, when they were looking for their shoes, yeah. So if Abba Dunna wants to speak Lashon Hara about himself, Gesin Tait. He said that when he was in Windsor Castle, I think. Yeah, he got himself a job as a waiter for the chief rabbi and Diane Erentroy when they were guests of the Queen. And he said that, "I noticed that Princess Anne's little boys were wearing Marks and Spencer jumpers." He said, "And I didn't say anything." Anyway, these are things. If a person wants to speak Lashon Hara about himself, to say things he's done, that's fine. What about when you're saying, "I did it, but I also did it with my friend"? Yeah, so we did this together. This is something that we got up to together. We both did this thing together. We used to jump on the buses and jump off the buses without paying. Oh yeah, people talk about things that they used to do in their youth. Yeah, we used to sort of, you know, go into the sweet shop, and we used to take something sometimes without paying, etc. If he's speaking about himself, that's fine. Tell everybody what you've done, no problem at all. Says the Chofetz Chaim. But the fact that you're speaking about someone else as well at the same time is not any sort of exoneration, or there's no exception in Lashon Hara. The chelek that you speak about yourself as much as you like. But the bit that you're speaking about someone else, he said that not. Then he says, is our speaker here or not here? Okay, so let's carry on.
Lashon Hara from a goy.
Boss?
Can you hear Lashon Hara from a goy?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, does the goy come into it at all?
Well, let's put it this way. The goy has no issur of sipur Lashon Hara.
Right.
So there's no issur for him to speak. So you're saying if he's speaking about a yid,
yeah,
are you allowed to be mekabel the Lashon Hara?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I would imagine that you can't, yeah. But only because, yeah, if not because, yeah, even if a yid was speaking Lashon Hara,
yeah.
Yeah, you're allowed to be choshesh, but you're not allowed to believe.
Yeah.
If a goy is kol shekei, no?
I don't know.
A goy is kol shekein. He's not regarded as a reliable witness in halacha.
No.
Good morning. Are you our speaker? You're not. Okay, fine. Let's carry on.
Dan Kong.
What?
Dan Kong. Okay. Whether it comes out of the head, you can Lashon Hara or not.
I don't know. Okay, then the Chofetz Chaim speaks about what happens if you hear Lashon Hara from two people, or from three people, or from 10 people. 10 different people tell you the same story about someone. So he says as follows. He says, normally we say that al pi shanayim edim yokum dovor, that two witnesses are regarded as reliable and the best in kampaskan halacha al pi shanayim edim. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that is true in a Beis Din. The Beis Din has rules of Beis Din. The Beis Din knows the halachas of Chosher Mishpot, how to discuss a case with an aid, how to be mekabel edus, drisha, chakira, etc., etc. Therefore, in a Beis Din, al pi shnayim edim yokum dovo. He says, outside a Beis Din, there's no heter whatsoever. Outside a Beis Din, he says, there's no heter whatsoever. It doesn't make a difference whether you hear it from one person, or you hear the same story from two, or for three, or for 10 people. The halacha will always be that you can be choshish to the extent of protecting yourself, but you can't go any further than that. And he says something else. He says that besides the fact that they're not believed because they're not Shnai Medim in Beis Din, besides that, he says, the fact is if they are speaking Lashon Hara, then they're doing an Avera. And certainly if they're doing it consciously and knowingly, they're doing an Avera, they would have a din of a Rosha. He said, why would I believe a Rosha? Somebody who is in the category of a Rosha, why would I believe him? And therefore he says that if you hear Lashon Hara from, it doesn't matter whether it's one person or 10 people, right? They are reshoim for speaking Lashon Hara, therefore you're not mekabel what they say, and because it's not in Beis Din, they don't have the din of Arpishnai Medim Yochum Dovot.
Start your day of the Torah, Northwest London, Monday, Hey Eo, 20th day of the Omer, 13th of May, Dayan Dr. Ton Schlitter, Ribbis in Day to Day Life, Part 1. This week's Torah is sponsored anonymously by the Schuss Hashwem Vachalim Amelchon Shachsulibo Tahem, Shalom Bim Heiro.
Amen.
Absolutely. Good morning. It's a two part series, and I'd like to take for the first part of this series. I'd just like to focus really on Heter Iska, what it is and various pitfalls of it. And Rabbi Yehuda Binstock Shlita, Mitz Hashem, he'll continue from here tomorrow from where we leave off. But Heter Iska, we spoke about it and I don't want to go over too much of it. There was a gathering on Chol HaMoed Thursday night in the Monks Hall. And there, at that meeting there, so then Dan Posen and I presented various concepts and various points to be aware of, pitfalls of ribbis generally, and I explained the concept of Heter Iska, what it is, briefly, just to get us into it, and then to move on to things that weren't discussed there, is the following. We all know that if you lend another Jew money, you're not allowed to charge him interest. That everybody knows. There is an issa to do so. The Torah says you're not allowed to. And therefore, that is... So what's this concept of a Heter Iska? What does it do? Is it just a magic wand somehow waves away, whisks away the issa of ribis, and now, from now on, you can charge somebody interest? There's no such thing. It can't be. And there never was, and there never will be. A Kodesh Baruch Hu says, not allowed to. And that's it. There is no mechanism to work around the Torah. There is no such thing. And that's not what a Heter Iska is. Let me just briefly explain. A Heter Iska is something which simulates. It's a financial arrangement by which sometimes... it's partially a loan, and that is interest-free, and partially it is an investment. As an investment, as a partner, and the proceeds of that investment, that is perfectly mutter to earn money from and share. So the person who provides the money is one partner, and the one who works the money, so to speak, and his profits, they share the profits together. But the part which is a loan, half of it is a loan, and half of it, often that's the standard, it doesn't have to be that way, then the half which is a loan, there must be no benefit brought to the lender by the borrower. must be absolute. That's a half of it, in which is often half of it is a loan, half of it is an investment. That half is purely an interest-free loan, no benefit whatsoever to the lender. The other half is an investment. What's the difference between a loan and an investment? A loan, if I lend you money, so then I may not charge you any interest, but you've got full risk and responsibility to return the capital that I lent you. And if chas v'shalom something goes wrong and the money gets lost, it gets stolen, it gets badly, the investment went sour, whatever it is, it's very sad, but the capital that you borrowed, you have to pay back. If it's an investment and I invest money with you, you've got to behave responsibly with my investment. You've got certain responsibilities, but in principle, if chas v'shalom things go wrong, whatever goes wrong, it's my responsibility. That's the difference between a loan and an investment. And it's so important to have this clear, as we're going to see in a moment. And therefore, Heta Iska works on the basis where the person who's providing the funds has his exposure, his risk limited, because half of it is a loan, so half the capital is assured by the recipient. The other half of the capital is invested, must be invested to the best of the recipient's ability. It must be invested responsibly, not at ridiculous risks. And from the proceeds, then there's an arrangement how much the provider of the funds will receive. That is what a heta iska is. It is arrangement. It doesn't have to be 50-50. It could be, and often we modify it. And as we mentioned on Thursday night at Chol HaMoed, there should never be any such thing as a standard heta iska form that you fill out. It's ludicrous, because every situation, the heta iska needs to be tailor-made to work. And I won't repeat over the story that I told over there, but please, if you speak to Rabbi Binstock, he will tell you where you can find the recording of the Thursday night. Let me tell you certain pitfalls. Literally, since we spoke on Thursday night, I've been inundated with people coming to me saying, is this all right, is that all right, is the other okay? And let me just tell you some of the pitfalls that have come since then that I'm trying to deal with. Here's a fascinating one. Fascinating one. Reuven and Shimon bought a house together somewhere in London. They bought a house together. How did they buy a house? Each one put £50,000 down. £50,000 down. The house cost £500,000. And they took out a loan, interest only, from a non-Jewish bank, Barclays Bank. Don't know whether it was Barclays, but let it be Barclays for the purpose of this example. So there's no problem. £400,000 from the bank, 50 each person, £500,000. The house was bought. Fantastic. They rented the house out. It brought in income. The income paid the interest to the bank and a bit more. So each of them had some money to take home. Fantastic. Not just that. The house prices went up. And it didn't take long before this £500,000 house was worth £600,000. Fantastic. Reuven says to Shimon, or Shimon says to Reuven, doesn't matter which one, but this is what happened, that Reuven said to Shimon, let me buy you out. I will offer you £100,000 because, though you put in 50, the house is now worth 600. So our joint capital of 100 that we put in is now worth 200. We've done very well. I will offer you £100,000 and buy you out. Or Shimon said, please buy me out. I could do with the capital. Shimon walked away with £100,000 in his pocket when he only put in £50,000 some time earlier. Shimon's happy, delighted. He's out with £100,000. Reuven's delighted because he owns the whole house. He owns the whole house. And this went on for a long time. Many years. In fact, it happened with a few houses. They bought a whole portfolio of houses. And Reuven bought out Shimon one by one. And in fact, Shimon went off, Reuven went off and sold some of the houses. Reuven suddenly wakes up and has learned a little bit about Ribis, and he phones me up and he says, have I got a problem of Ribis over here? Over to you. Here's the situation over here. Let me just tell you what happened to this mortgage. This mortgage is in Reuven and Shimon's name, jointly and severally. So it's £400,000 in principal they owe. Said Reuven to Shimon, I'm paying you £100,000, I'll buy you out. Don't worry, I will service the mortgage from the rent. And I will see to it and make sure that the mortgage is paid regularly. You've no need to worry. Shimon was perfectly happy with this because Shimon, there's security on the house. They can't really do anything to Shimon because plenty of equity in the house. They'll go for the house and that should be perfectly okay. So Shimon's happy. Is there any problem with Ribis here? Nobody's paying Ribis to anybody. Who's paying Ribis to who? Reuven doesn't make any payments to Shimon from now on. He paid him £100,000. Shimon's gone. Shimon's gone, that's all. There is a problem of Ribis. Why did Reuven only pay £100,000 when he bought half a house? The house is worth £600,000. The share that he bought was £300,000 share. That's what the house is worth. It's worth £300,000. So why does Reuven only pay Shimon £100,000 for his share in the house? Because of the mortgage. So it's like this. Correct. But what's happening over here? But surely the half of the house that he bought is worth £300,000. It's just that there's a debt to the bank. So the answer is, what's happening over here is that Reuven only paid £100,000 for a house that was worth £300,000, or half a house was worth £300,000. Those extra £200,000, Reuven and Shimon did not realize this, is simply Reuven borrowing £200,000 from Shimon. And he says to Shimon, look, I will service your mortgage. The bank doesn't know anything about this. If the bank knew anything about this, they would call in the mortgage straight away and they would ask for a repayment and say, by all means, start again. And therefore, the mortgage remains. Shimon owes the bank £200,000. Reuven owes Shimon £200,000. Because Reuven has bought a £300,000 share in a house for which he's only paid £100,000. And the reason is because Reuven has to service Shimon's mortgage with the bank. But why is Reuven paying the interest on the £200,000 that belongs to Reuven, that belongs to Shimon? Very simply, because Reuven is using, if you like, a £200,000 debt. He is making use of that he never paid Shimon. And in return for that, Reuven is servicing Shimon's debt. Basically, whatever Reuven is paying the bank for half of the loan, whatever he's paying in interest payments, in truth, is Reuven paying Shimon, let's call it 4% he's paying the bank, is Reuven paying Shimon 4%. Very simply.
Because he owes the loan is to a goy, and he's taken over a loan to a goy.
There are two loans going on here. This is what you have to realize. This is not self-evident and obvious, but if you stop and think about it, it must be this way. Shimon owes money to the goy. Shimon owes £200,000, maybe he owes £400,000, but that's another question, separately and severally. But let's assume for the moment they owe half each. So Shimon owes the goy £200,000, and Reuven he owes the goy £200,000, you're right. But there's another £200,000 over here that Reuven underpaid for the half that he bought. And the reason why he underpaid for it was because Shimon owes the bank And Reuven is going to service Shimon's loan. And there's a kinyan called Kinyan Eved Kanani. Kinyan Eved Kanani is, if I give you money and I say it is, I'm giving you money to pay off so-and-so's debt, how does that work? I didn't give the money to so-and-so to pay off the debt. When I give you the money on his behalf, it's as if I'm paying him, and then he pays you. So therefore, if Reuven pays the bank what Shimon owes the bank, it's as if Reuven is paying Shimon that money, and it's ribis katsutsa min haTorah. And therefore, it's a serious problem. We're going to have to see how we can get them out of it. It's not selfly obvious what it is. I've got mortgage brokers on the, one mortgage broker on the job, and I might have to engage solicitors on it as well to understand when the bank gives a loan jointly, what's called separately and severally, there's a funny thing going on. They tie both partners down for the full 400, yet there's only a loan of 400 going on over here. Is there some way out to say that Reuven really owes the bank 400, always did? And if so, does that help us in any way? That's to be continued. But just to be aware, this is a pitfall which is absolutely hidden and concealed. Let's move on to other cases, because otherwise we won't get onto there. Somebody else came to me just the other night, and I won't tell you who he is or anything about anything else, but he's given me permission to tell over the case to you, to what's going on. It's like this. Somebody wanted an investor, quite a very successful investor, and was attracting funds to be able to invest more, and obviously takes a cut for it. His sales pitch to be able to attract investors is that he guarantees the capital. I must tell you, there was a most beautiful and fantastic Heta Iska written. Lovely Heta Iska by somebody who's quite a mumche, clearly, in Hilchas Ribis, wrote a very eloquent and watertight Heta Iska, but it's useless. Because the difference between a loan and an investment, that's why we started. A loan is where the capital is 100% guaranteed. An investment is that it's my risk. I give the money, I invest, that the money is at risk. If you take responsibility for my money, basically I've lent you the money. That's how it is in halacha. Very, very important. And some of these heta iskas are drawn up not as this is half a loan and this is half an investment. They just say, here's £100,000. Reuven's giving Shimon let's use different names, you shouldn't get mixed up with thing. Yehuda is giving Yisachar £100,000, and they are to share the risk. That basically means that that Yehuda lent Yisachar 50 and invested 50 with him. That's the way it is. So this Heta Iska doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Why has this happened? Because the Heta Iska drawn up on this case wasn't tailor-made. They were using a standard Heta Iska, and they don't understand what they're doing. And therefore, if you don't understand what you're doing, you're going to fall right in. Tell you another case. This is the same person brought me, after the shir on Thursday night, brought me another investment that he's got. And what's this investment? He's got what's called a Heta Iska Klolli. General Heta Iska, everything that we do together is all loans. Whenever the word loan is mentioned, we don't mean the loan, of course. Whenever the word interest, we don't mean chas v'shalom, we don't mean interest. But we mean Iska payments and Iska revenue and etc. etc. Lovely, what's it called, flowery, lishonas, wonderful. And it was this one was actually taken out of Rav Moshe Sternbuch Schlitter's Sefer and translated eloquently into English and beautifully signed, dated and everything else. The trouble is, after that, they went and they wrote a loan agreement. And the loan agreement says that Reuven has lent money to Shimon and he pays so and so much interest, etc., etc. That's what it says. Heta Iska Klolli we've got over here. So, of course, when we say the word loan, we don't mean the word loan. We mean we mean an investment. And when we say we don't mean that. But it doesn't work. Why? So says the Bris Yehuda and so others. If after you sign a heter iska klolli, you explicitly write out a loan agreement between you. Basically, you've overridden the heter iska klolli. Heter iska klolli is not meant for that. Heter iska klolli is meant where there is a non-Jewish loan agreement, and you're coming along to, you're using a standard loan agreement, and then on the other way round, you then have a heter iska on top of it. And heter iska klollis are things you should keep away from as much as possible anyway, for exactly this reason. You then write a heter iska on it, and you say, yes, it's true that the agreement says that, but what we really mean, this is just a standard form that they've got, and when we are making something between us, we redefine the terms, and we mean something else. But if you do it the other way around, so you've got what you've made, which is the tailor-made loan agreement with interest payments, and it's not going to work. The heter iska is null and void. You've overridden the heter iska. There's other things. It's like this. There are other pitfalls. Allow me just to share certain things with you. Another problem that we have is the following. We've had situations where there've been disputes about heter iska payments. Right, let's have a look. What is a heter iska? Heter iska was 1% a month, was whatever it is, percent a month was agreed. Obviously, whatever payments are made have to come from profits that were forecast as being reasonable. That's a very important thing. If somebody says, I'd like to sign a heter iska, I'll pay you, it's only a bridging loan, it's only for a short amount of time, so I'll charge you 1.5% a month, 2% a month, I've seen. Remember, 1.5% a month or 2% a month means 3% a month or 4% a month, because on the half of it, which is a standard heter iska agreement, half of it is a loan. So there's no interest coming from that loan. The other half has got to generate all the general returns that you're signing up to. So if it says 1% a month, it means 24% a year. If it says 1.5% a month, you can do the maths yourself. It comes to that. So it comes to ridiculous figures. Are there ever investments that generate them? Yes, they are. But they have to be forecast. It has to be something which is reasonable, something which is to be expected in the investment that was discussed, that was entered into. So there are good investments. There are people who are good at investing. They're people who know the property market, who have connections, who go to auctions, buy cheaply, renovate, and get planning permission, and then they sell it on, and it's a completely different perspective the time they're finished, and they turn it over in 3 or 4 months, and they do 3 or 4 of them a year, and basically they're really making serious money. And therefore, if it is such a thing, then yes, but otherwise it can't be. There's another thing we find sometimes in heter iska agreements. They charge 1% a month. Okay, 1% a month, 24% a year, a bit high, but they were entering into some sort of a business venture, etc. Okay, but then there's something called an entrance fee and an exit fee. So we say to them, excuse me, what's that? So they said, well, look, in order to be able to provide the funding for this heter iska, I had to go to the bank. I went to the bank and they charged me an arrangement fee. And they charged me a this and the other. So I'm just passing it on. So I said to this person, just help me to understand this. Let's divide up this heter iska into two parts. It's a loan and it's an investment. Okay. There's a din, by the way, very important. It's a Gemara, Mefurash Gemara, and Mishnah in Bor Basra. If somebody comes, never mind iska payments, just an interest-free loan. I come to you and I say, please, could you give me an interest-free loan of £10,000? and you say to me, look, £10,000 is not just something small. We need to draw up a contract. There has to be documented that it's been borrowed. I won't charge you any interest, of course, and you're very welcome. You can borrow it for a year, but let's have it properly documented, and that's the right thing to do. You're not supposed to lend money. It's an issa to lend money without any documentation to it. And the din of lifnei iva lisitin michshol. You're putting a situation, you're putting the borrower in the temptation you're giving them to borrow and then chas v'shalom to deny that the loan ever took place. And therefore, just if a simple IOU signing it, that is enough, but that you're supposed to do unless the figure is so small that you're happy to be michshol if they were to deny it. So the din, now who pays for the contract to be written up? If it's just an IOU, so there's no charge, there's no thing. But who asked to pay? There's an explicit Mishnah in Daf Kuf Samch Zayin Amud Beis in Bob Basra. V'haloive noitein schar. The loive has to pay for the fee of the sofer, of the scribe, has to pay for the drawing up the contract. That the loive has to pay, that's not ribis. Because that's fine, he's borrowing the money. That those are the costs of borrowing. Ribis, interest, has to be aganote. It has to be because I had to wait for the money. This is just to set up the loan. And similarly, if you're lending money and you need to take security for the £10,000, and that costs as well, you can charge for that as well. That's perfectly acceptable. Now, the question is, what happens? By the way, the Gemara says, pshita. Of course, it's obvious. That's not ribis. That's just the cost of setting up the loan. Says the Gemara, Daf Kuf Samach Esom Adalef, the Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, the Gemara says, Be'iska. Fascinating. What happens if we are arranging an iska together? You provide the money and I'm supposed to be working your money. And we divide in the profits. So now the Gemara says, that who pays for drawing up the iska? Who pays for drawing it up? So the Gemara says, the recipient of the funds. Ooh, it's a big chiddush. Half of it is a loan, we understand. We just discussed that. But the other half is an investment. If I am receiving your investment, making your money work hard, and giving you your share of the profits, why should I have to pay for the contract? And that's a very good question. Therefore, it's not pshita. And Tosfos Yontov attempts to give an answer. And the Sefer Bris Yehuda tries to explain what the answer is. It could be very simply that the answer, if I can suggest, is that the answer is that when I receive money from you to invest, you're taking the risk for that money, aren't you? You're taking the risk. When it comes to when I receive money as a loan, so then you give me 10,000, you lend me £10,000, I've got free use of this money, you gain nothing for it except the mitzvah. But when you give me money to invest, the money that you've given me to invest is indeed, that is something that you're going to benefit from it as well. So therefore the question is, why should I have to pay for it? So the answer is that since this is something that we're going to share in the profits, that's something that is going to be, you're going to have the risk, and therefore it isn't all your benefit. And as a result, what's going to happen is that it is something that is also going to help me because I'm going to be paid something to work for your investment, which must be. So therefore, that's the reason why I get paid. So people typically will come along and say, look, an arrangement fee was £2,000. The bank charged me £2,000. I'll charge you £1,000 on the way in and £1,000 on the way out. Is that okay? Can that be added to it? So the answer is that whatever is reasonable to be able to receive the money, to be able to, if it's the part, the palga, which is the path, which is going to be an investment, why should I pay for you receive? What do I care where you got the money from? Whether you got the money from your bank account and the money is sitting there in your account, or whether you had to finance yourself and get the money, what's that got to do with me? You're coming to me with an investment and I'm going to invest your money. So there's no way that you can charge anything for the palg of Pekodin, for the half which is a Pekodin. The only thing possibly we can discuss is possibly you can charge for receiving the loan. Is that so? No, because that loan that you received didn't give you security. It's one thing if you set up a contract between us, and for that you have to pay a lawyer. For that you have to get security on my house, and for that you also have to put a charge on my house, and you have to pay various sundries that you can charge me for. But otherwise there's no such thing as an entrance fee and an exit fee. It's absolute nonsense. That has to be added to the ISKA payments, and then seen whether that was reasonable. So your 1%, which ends up being 2%, meaning 24% a year or more, if it's 2%, it's 48%, can suddenly land up at 50, 60%. And that is absolutely, it'll be way off limits. So entrance fees and exit fees are a big problem. And you need to know it's not possible that you can do it at all. Just want to mention one or two things, and then we'll stop. And that's the following. To say that everything that we're going to do is al pi heta iska, and not to draw anything up, but b'dieved it'll work, but l'chatchila, it is also to do so. When it comes to receivers, and we're getting a lot of trouble with this over here, you've got to know, very important, some people put in, when they make heta iska agreements, in the loan document that they call it, which is big, highly problematic, as we've discussed. But if there's in this document, they write that if you fall behind with your payments, that you agree to that we allow the receivers to come in and sell the property over your head. Receivers are thugs. They're just thugs. That's what they are. They're simply thugs who come along. And they intimidate people, they charge ridiculous fees, and you're not allowed to go to a receiver unless you've been to Beis Din. So if you're the one who have a heta iska, and you have invested money with someone, lent half and invested half, and the money isn't coming in, the capital's not coming back, or the payments have stopped, you've got to go to Beis Din first. If you just go straight to the receivers, you should not receive a single penny of anything that you've paid the receivers. There's no permission. Are receivers erkois? No, they're not. But are you allowed to go to a receiver without having gone to Beis Din? Absolutely not, and people don't realize this. And the reason is very simply, going to a receiver is a last resort. It's a way of raising, getting your money back. And that was agreed to. If the money isn't coming back and you tried everything else, trying everything else includes going to Beis Din. Why? Because inevitably, when people come to us in Beis Din, things get sorted out. Suddenly, the one who couldn't pay, suddenly ways are found to pay. And therefore, to go to a receiver, to add huge bills onto somebody who's struggling as it is absolutely forbidden to do unless you've been to Beis. You need Rishus from Beis to do so. People don't know it, and even if you didn't know it, it won't help you. You will not be entitled to receive the money back. But I can tell you more than that. The extortionate charges of receivers would not be accepted by the courts, never mind by Beis Din. Because, and I've had experience of this, they will simply cut down their fees. They'll cut them down incredibly by a number of fold because they're extortionate, they're unreasonable, and you might, even in the courts, they might not give it to you anything at all if you can't show that you did everything possible before you went there. So even if you put it in the contract, be very careful. There's no such thing as doing it, quite apart from the Issa Shaboy, to do this to somebody else. If there's no other way, you need to go to Beis Din first. There we are.